cabinet here with the evolution of bowling. And I suppose actually for a lot of people, and particularly people getting involved in cricket, you know, think, well, bowling is bowling, and it's all, you know, what do you mean the evolution of bowling? But clearly hasn't always been right arm over or left arm round or whatever.
Well, absolutely right, Adrian. It's taken, like so many things, many years to evolve to bowling as we know it today. And all the early cricket was with underarm bowling, like you might have started off in the garden when you were little,
yeah.
Underarm bowling. But the thing to remember is that it was underarm bowling, but it was all along the ground. None of this pitched length bowling. So the first half of the 1700s, bowling was all along the ground. And that is the absolute reason why the early cricket bats are curved at the bottom, rather like hockey sticks, because if the ball's coming at you along the ground, you need to swat it away.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, rather like you would with a hockey stick. So the early bats, and some have still survived, are curved quite notably. And then maybe the middle or a little bit afterwards of the 1700s, somebody decided that rather than rolling it along the ground at great pace, they could pitch a length ball. And this was a huge advance in the science of bowling, because you could actually bowl a yorker or bowl a full toss or impart spin on the ball. So there are early exponents of this newfangled length bowling, still underarm, by people like Lumpy Stevens and David Harris. And they coincide with the Hambledon era. People will know something about Hambledon being a cricketing force,
yes,
in Hampshire in the last quarter of the 18th century. Well, this is where length bowling began. But like all these things, there's still progress to be made, and one or two bowlers were bowling with their arms getting a bit like round arm bowling, and this raised a few eyebrows, and people were no bald. There's a fellow called John Wills, a Kent chap, he was no bald. But the idea of round arm bowling didn't go away, and it took two Sussex professionals, William Lillywhite and James Broadbridge, to persist with round-arm bowling, and they were very successful. They were getting top sides out regularly, and it caused a lot of controversy.
Mm.
It was the Sussex bowling. People didn't like it. The hand was getting parallel with the shoulder, sometimes even a little bit higher, and there were other Sussex people bowling in that way.
Just gives us an idea of time scales on this.
Yeah,
project.
Time scales. We've moved on really from the Hambledon era, which more or less finishes at 1800. And so the Lillywhite Broadbridge people come along in the 1820s. And in 1827, there are three trial matches, sometimes called test matches, between Sussex and England to test out the merits of round-arm bowling opposed to the old-fangled underarm bowling. So Sussex had to play England to get the merits approved and agreed. And it took a while for the MCC to approve round-arm bowling, but it did happen. And the catalyst for the approval, the laws had to be changed, was one of Jane Austen's people mentioned in this book we spoke about earlier on. And he was George Knight, Jane Austen's favourite nephew. And he's mentioned in Jane's letters. He was known as Itty Gorgie when he was little.
Itty
Gorgie, yes. A little baby name. But he turned out to be a super all-round cricketer. But being a member of the MCC and a gentleman, rather than the professionals like Lillywhite and Brooke, it needed somebody of his clout. And he wrote several letters that are still in existence to the MCC, advocating that they approve the change to the bowling laws to make round-arm bowling legal, and that happened in the 1830s.
Wow. So can we say that this was a Sussex innovation?
It was a Sussex innovation,
yes,
without any doubt at all.
Yeah.
One or two had dabbled slightly earlier from Kent and Surrey and so on, but to get it to the finishing post, it took two Sussex boys and some of their imitators.
And did it... it's obviously controversial, though. It took time. So were Sussex unpopular at that stage?
They were unpopular, and even when these three trial matches were taking place, the England players refused to play the third match, even though that was the whole idea, because Sussex were bowling this dastardly roundel. And maybe fortuitously, the third match was won by England, which sort of softened the blow a little bit. But nevertheless, they all decided, or the MCC eventually decided, that round arm should prevail and it would be legalised. So then we go another 30 years when bowlers are getting their arms higher than shoulder level. They're beginning to reach up and up and up.
Yeah.
So you were meant to keep your arm at shoulder level like this. Some were getting more purchase on the ball by getting higher and higher. And in 1864, there was a famous match at the Oval when somebody got no-balled for throwing because his arm had got higher. Umpire John Lillywhite, son of William, walked off in disgust, and the whole thing was again in the melting pot. So overarm bowling, as we know it today, stems from that moment, 1864, and from then onwards, it has always been legal, always been the same as we know it today. But round arm bowling persisted, and people like W.G. Grace, still playing cricket into the 1900s, still favoured the old-fashioned round arm bowling. And some bowlers still favoured the old underarm bowling. And there was a magnificent underarm bowler for Sussex who is in the cabinet here, this gentleman, Walter Humphreys, and he actually took 150 wickets in one season in the 1890s, bowling underarm. And here he is.
So you could bowl both, could you?
You could bowl both. You could bowl round arm, overarm. The others weren't banned.
Right.
You could, even though overarm had been legalised, you could carry on still bowling your round arm or your underarm. But Walter Humphreys, he was a bit of an anachronism, but he was so successful. And the people say that bowling underarm, you could turn the ball, you could put a twist on it as if you were turning a door handle, and you could do it turning to leg or turning to off to keep the batsman guessing. And he bowled in a match against the great Australian Murdoch, who got a huge score, but he said that he still could not read which way Murdoch was going to turn the ball. Sorry, Humphreys was going to turn the ball. And Humphreys, this rather eccentric Sussex bowler, was selected to go to Australia with Stoddart's team for the Ashes in 1894-5. And although he got quite a lot of wickets out there, he didn't figure in a test match.
It's incredible, isn't it? So you could bowl... do you know what? I was just thinking as well, I probably ought to know this, really. Because there was a one-day international, wasn't it? Didn't Greg Chappell bowl an underarm ball?
Was it Greg Chappell? It was Trevor Chappell.
Trevor Chappell.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was ordered by his brother, Greg, to bowl an old-fashioned underarm all along the ground.
Yes.
So the New Zealander could not hit a six.
That's right, to win the game.
It could only go for four.
Right.
And he was severely reprimanded. I think he regrets it now. And I'm not going to comment about Australian gamesmanship.
Oh, go on, Roger.
But there's always been a bit of edge between Australia and New Zealand.
Because of that.
Well, even before that, I guess. Yeah. But the Aussies didn't want to lose. Greg Chappell saw it as a way to make sure last ball didn't go for six, which would have lost them the match. And it caused a bit of a furore.
I don't know if it's outlawed now.
It has since been outlawed.
It has been outlawed.
In fact, all underarm bowling has been outlawed within the last 5 or 6 years.
Right, so we're at a limited overs game today. So if it happens off the last ball today, it can't happen.
No, it can't happen.
No underarm bowling.
But you could probably bowl a round arm like Malinga.
Right, okay.
You know, the Sri Lankan.
Yeah.
It still comes in almost an old-fashioned round arm way.
I don't know if you've noticed down here, though, it mentions that in July 1822, when Humphreys was playing, and he was no-balled, it incensed him so much that he threw down the ball, stalked off the Lord's ground, rounded his horse, and rode out of the ground.
Now that was
never bowled again.
That was John Wills, not Humphreys. It was John Wills.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was an earlier exponent of round-arm bowling.
So hopefully nobody today will throw the ball down and go off on their horse
in high dudgeon.
That's right.
Oh, that's okay. And actually, as with everything in the museum, it's beautifully collated and put together in this lovely cabinet. And I noticed there's a team sheet there. Is that England against Sussex? Was that one of the games?
That's 1827.
Right, okay.
That's the one played here in Brighton,
right,
on the
okay.
Royal Cricket Ground. And I would just pay tribute to Norman Epps, who put the whole exhibition together with help and background. That's Garth LaRue,
yes.
A modern bowler, ferocious bowler,
yeah.
Used to bowl in tandem with Imran. I suspect LaRue had to bowl up the hill. But that just shows the modern style of bowling compared to the underarm and the round arm.
Yeah. Wonderful. And there's some pictures of some great Sussex bowlers, of course, down here as well.
Yes.
Morris Tate, Ian Thompson,
yes.
John Snow, Mushtaq Ahmed, and right up to the current day.
Jofra
as well.
Yes.
So how wonderful. It's a wonderful story about the evolution of bowling. So we've heard all about a famous actor who played cricket for Sussex. We've heard about the evolution of bowling, of overarm bowling, and how Sussex were very much at the forefront of that, making themselves unpopular. So it's just another story of the many fascinating stories here in the Sussex Cricket Museum. So Roger, thank you again for all your help and your research. Thank you, Keith.
Thanks very much, Adrian, for helping us out once again with our podcast. And I would ask that anybody that listens to these likes them. We're now on a number of apps, including Spotify, so they're widely available. And the more you like us, the more we can get done. And that would be great for the future. So thanks very much, Adrian.
My pleasure.
Thank you very much, Adrian.